forward.
It was late one evening when my boss, Matt Kibbe, called me at home to ask me to speak to a group of students over Skype. He was sick and unable to make the appointment, and having recently witnessed me delivering a speech at the annual Students for Liberty conference, I guess he thought I was up to the job. Of course, I accepted, and that was the first time I met Remzo Martinez, the enthusiastic leader of that student group, asking me questions as I struggled to be understood through a dodgy digital connection. A year later, I had the pleasure to be able to work with Remzo directly, and since that time, we have remained friends. I continue to be impressed not only by his tireless efforts to advance liberty in America, but by his apparently unquenchable thirst for new ideas and points of view. I suspect the two are not unrelated. Like most people who view human freedom as an end in itself, I have often wondered why this idea is such a difficult one to sell to the masses. All people, or most people at least, want to be free and resent restrictions on their ability to do what they choose. Is it not natural to extend the same courtesy to others? The Golden Rule, arguably the foundation of Western morality, would seem to indicate so. Yet there's the rub. Not wanting to be a slave is pure instinct. Not wanting anyone to be a slave is philosophy. The question is, how do we get from instinct to philosophy? If we look around, we can see clues that things are not as they appear, that something isn't quite right with the world. You don't have to be a sleuth to notice them, but you do have to pay attention. Why are there so many political slogans which people are required to repeat, whether or not they understand them? Why do people so ferociously root for one political party and demonize the other, when the policy outcomes are more or less indistinguishable? Why do we hate and shun people for nothing more than a difference of opinion? Once you begin to ask these questions, you're halfway towards understanding American politics. Let me put it a different way. Why do people root for their hometown sports team? Why do people from Dallas support the Dallas Cowboys and people from Pittsburgh support the Pittsburgh Steelers? The players aren't from those cities. The coaches aren't either. Neither are the team's owners. We've created the illusion that a group of professional athletes wearing the same colors somehow represents something special about a particular location, and people fall for it. Hard. It's the same reason the supposedly anti-war left celebrated a Nobel Peace Prize conferred on Barack Obama, who proceeded to spend every day of his 8-year presidency at war. For the most part, these disputes are not about policy. They're about scoring points for your team. In professional sports, thankfully, the stakes are low, at least as far as the fans are concerned. If the Yankees don't win the World Series this year, oh well, there's always next time. Fans may act like a Super Bowl loss is the end of the world, but they get over it soon enough. In politics, despite the practical similarity of the two parties, the stakes are a bit higher. You may dislike Tom Brady, but no amount of Super Bowl rings will allow him to raise your taxes, throw you in jail, or regulate your livelihood out of existence. Government can do all these things with minimal effort. Intellectually, people know that politics matters more than sports. It explains the sheer intensity of the anger and vilification of the other side, as well as apocalyptic claims that if our team loses, we might as well pack up the last 5,000 years of civilization and move to Canada. But I'm not sure most people really believe it. Like professional sports, I think it's just theater to most people. Something to get outraged about. Something to relieve the boredom of everyday life. If people really thought Donald Trump was going to get us into a nuclear war, they would have been just as worried about Hillary, whose posture towards Russia should have been downright alarming to anyone who values life on this planet, instead of lionizing her as Saint Hillary the Deserving. If people really thought Trump was a threat to women with his admittedly disgusting locker room talk, they would have, perhaps, shown the slightest bit of concern over Hillary's unapologetic defense of a known rapist. And I'm not just talking about her husband. It's theater. It's team sports. And the only thing most people really care about is what affects them directly. Once you've thoroughly internalized this, you'll realize that what we are engaged in is not, as is popularly asserted, a war between ideas. It's a war of an idea versus no idea. It's a prize fight between philosophy and instinct. And viewed in those terms, it's clear that no bookie in his right mind would give odds against instinct. Yet amazingly, the struggle is not a hopeless one. Mankind has triumphed over instinct before, the U.S. Constitution being perhaps the most impressive example. All it takes is for people to realize that they should want for others what they want for themselves, namely the liberty to decide how to live their own lives as long as they don't hurt people or take their stuff. The golden rule, as one would expect from so noble a substance, has not tarnished with age. In the pages that follow, Remzo W. Martinez, the W stands for winning, documents his own awakening to the philosophy of liberty, while simultaneously painting a picture of a dynamic and diverse movement, so different from the one caricatured in the popular media. We're not all born to be philosophers, but under the right circumstances, provided we allow our minds to be sufficiently open, we can all see that liberty isn't just personally satisfying, nor is it just the absence of oppression. It's a positive force for good for the entire human race. Logan Albright, March 29th, 2018, Washington, D.C.